Welcome to episode 16 of New Tech People. Today we have two guests for the first time, Clay Thomas and Peter Drew, organisers of the Newcastle Coders Group. This episode will give you some insight into what it's like to actually attend one of these events and also a brief history of where the events have come from and what goes on there. Hope you enjoy this episode. Find it insightful. Today I'm here with the organisers of the Newcastle Coders Group, Peter, Drew and Clay Thomas. Peter, can you give us a quick overview of who you are? Who are the people behind Newcastle Coders Group?
I am a developer. I have been in the area for since about 2002. I ran a small business up in Tamworth. I came down here looking for more opportunities. I came to really love the area. Moved here with my partner, who I've been together now for coming up to 21 years, which is amazing. We now have a four-year-old child. I have worked in a variety of industries. Mostly, I seem to switch back and forth between education and employment agencies, but writing systems for them. But lately, it's been real estate. And I work for a company called BMT. They're quantity surveyors, and they are one of the few people that can actually write a proper 40-year schedule for depreciation for an investment property. They're one of the largest companies that do that. I think they are the largest company in Australia that do that job. And you often see them mentioned in places like on the block and things like that. So it's an interesting place to work. I work on their house advertising portal, which is called homesales.com.au.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's a good plug there. I've worked for them for the last 2.5 years. It's been a whirlwind ride of creating Angular apps and basically .NET Core backend type stuff, and I lead a small team there. We've been really engaged with Angular and Scrum and various new technologies and various frameworks. It's been a very steep learning curve from someone who previously was primarily just a C# developer, but we're almost entirely AWS now, and it's a very interesting environment. Place to work.
Mate, I think it's actually really good that the people behind an event like this, and somebody that's technical, somebody that's been through this, somebody that's actually like one of the attendees going through the same problems, and as you just mentioned, hey, you're quite traditionally C# developer, but has had to evolve with the times and going to face the same challenges that everyone else. So it's sort of, it's great that there's a practitioner behind it, right?
Yeah.
And Clay, give us a quick overview of who you are, what you're doing.
Moved down to Newcastle from Foster in 2008 because I realised that working kitchens wasn't going to be a lifelong endeavour for me. It's only about working 10-hour days for shifts and standing up all the time. It just didn't really do it for me. So I came down, went through uni and popped out into a little company called Minlog, writing mining software, where we did some pretty different things. I went through and worked out how do you get a message to a machine that's 2 kilometres underground and then 1 kilometre away from the closest network connection. So started working on how to connect those things and solve some really interesting problems. And then as I went on, I thought that wasn't where I wanted to live my life. I always had that bit of an issue with working in mining, coming from a bit of a greeny background, and end up starting to talk people around and went along to my first coders group, so 2010. And I shut the feed and got talking with John Roach, I was working with, about what I'd like to talk about. And we sat down and gave a talk on the solid principles of code design. And it's sort of formed a bit of a theme in my career, which is always about code quality. I was the guy complaining, we need to write more tests, we need to make better code quality. I don't care that you want to get it out tomorrow. We need to make it good so that it continues to work for years. And that path sort of led me to going towards NIB. So work there now in the Digital Emerging Business Delivery Department, which is a big mouthful, so we just call it DevD. Do have people come in, work there for a little while, and say, look, I've been here for 6 months, I've never met DevD. Who's DevD? It's like, oh, that's us, you're a DevD. But yeah, so we're working there, working in completely AWS, Node.js, and React front ends, and doing some really cool stuff, and in a company that I was a bit surprised when I got there because health insurance is really, really backwards, not going anywhere. But yeah, we're very technology agnostic and pretty keen to get into every new thing coming out and learn what's going on. Very forward thinking company.
I'm definitely one of the most forward thinking companies in Newcastle, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you started out with interviewing Matt Finch, who has been driving a lot of that AWS adoption and has been all around the world, so it's spruiking AWS now. So yeah, I've been there for 2.5 years and sort of think I'll probably keep on there because they're definitely driving my career forward and getting me thinking and giving me the fodder to go and speak. So I've spoken recently at D2D and big Microsoft NDC conference, and I'm trying to angle my way into more of that again this year. I think it's good for me and good for the Newcastle community to see Newcastle people getting out, getting up at these big conferences and saying, Newcastle isn't just sit back, we're really a forward-moving town.
I agree. I think both of you guys are doing a phenomenal job for the community, both like individually and then collectively as with Newcastle Coders Group, to bring it about like this to Newcastle on a consistent basis and to get living. And yeah, living is a big part. Just to keep something like this alive for as long as you have, it's been phenomenal effort.
Thank you.
Mate, boys, can you give us a quick overview of, you know, where did Newcastle Coders Group come from?
Well, we started back in 2005 in December, and it was actually myself and another guy, someone you've actually interviewed previously, which was David Williams.
Yeah.
He and I were working together at the time, and we both had an interest in learning more about our craft. So we were traveling down to Sydney at odd occasions to go and see speakers down there, and there really wasn't anything here that was like it. So at some point, we said to each other, you know, there really should be something up here. And we set about creating it. And that was within 3 days of that conversation, we put on our first event.
Yeah.
David gave the first talk. He talked about Visual Studio 2005. We set up in the Tessa offices at the time, the company that later became Skilled, and it was bought out then again by Humanis, I think. Yeah. It's just constantly bought out. But that office out in Cardiff was the first venue. From there, we had about 14 people show up out of just sending emails around and word of mouth. And from that, we then basically had our next meeting. We got a professional speaker to come up from Microsoft. He came up from Sydney, and Andrew Coates, and we had 60 people turn up. And from there, it just sort of took off for quite a while. We had Adam Koger from SSW. We had Billy Hollis from Redmond in the United States. We had lots and lots of different speakers over the years. And it's just been a bit of a roller coaster, I guess.
I think 60 people, that'd have to be nearly a record for a local tech.
It was probably our largest event. And I think it was just because it was the novelty of it.
Yeah.
We settled down to about 40 thereafter, and then we're probably, you know, these days we're around 20, 25,
yeah,
30.
Yeah, 25 are our usual numbers these days.
Yeah.
25 on a monthly basis, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty significant. So there's obviously both of you involved in doing this off your own bat in your own time. How does organising an event like this come together?
Well, it's not just us. We do have other people helping out. David's still involved occasionally, and John helps out too.
Yeah, John Roach from Banmore now.
He's, yep.
Just helps out, and just organised our most recent sponsorship. So we lost our major sponsor this year, and then immediately he was able to jump on board, you know, within an hour of saying no and say, okay, yeah, we'll come in, we'll start paying for pizza.
Yeah, we've been quite fortunate with sponsors over the years. It's been great. Having Microsoft sponsored the pizza initially, and that way so people could come and get a free feed, which really for a group like this, a free feed is sort of expected almost these days.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've had to do all sorts of different things to try and keep the group going. Everyone chips in $5 or, you know, getting individual sponsors or that sort of thing. But keeping sponsors, I guess, on board is probably a really key thing. Until recently, we had BMT, which is where I work, been sponsoring the group.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that for a couple of years now. They've been sponsoring it just for the exposure, I suppose.
Yeah.
They haven't really asked very much of us in return. It's been quite a good relationship. But
that's the necessity for the community events, right, is to have local businesses jumping on board and helping support that. not only as sponsors, but also like both your companies, obviously, to give you the time to, you know, time to invest in doing this sort of thing.
Sure. Well, BMT, I mean, we have a local team, but we have presences in pretty much every city around Australia. So
yeah.
It's quite a big company. So the fact that they do support local events is a terrific thing.
Yeah, nice. So you just made mention of the pizza before. It gives a quick overview of like what if I'm going to turn up to an event, what should I expect?
So usually we'll rock in, start trying to usher people in once they work out how the University of Newcastle works and where the ICT building is. It's on top of the car park. Pretty much every month I'll get a message from some new person saying, "Where are you?" Right? Yeah. Look at the multi-story car park, then look up.
Yes.
Yeah. So we get people in, get them going and settle down. Then usually do like a news thing where we just sort of go around, try and engage people. So one of the things that we love about the Coders Group and that some of our regular speakers love about the Coders Group is it's very interactive. We're not one person standing up the front just talking to people. It's often people calling out and sometimes getting a little bit riled up. But yeah. So we start with news, try and facilitate that, set up that environment. So it's, hey, we want you to talk back to the speaker, talk back to us and get things going. So cover off whatever's happened recently in technology. Every month a new JavaScript framework's coming out, so you can always find something to talk about. Then, yeah, we kick off with the speaker, let them run for, really try and give them as much scope as they want. So we've had some talks go for 5 minutes and we've had Adam Kogan come and talk for 3 hours. So talk user for horse out there. He just goes, because he's using us as a testing ground for his things. So he goes, does his talk. About an hour in, we stop.
I'll just interrupt you. When he says testing ground, he means Adam will present at big events down in Sydney or Melbourne, and we'll often get a precursor or a preview of the whole thing.
Yeah, very nice.
Oslo, London, Redmond, he talks at the international keynote Microsoft events. So he's bringing those talks that he's going to speak at to thousands of people.
Yeah,
and definitely. Sitting in a room with 20 people and saying, what do you like, what don't you like? I'm going to give you the 3-hour version and I'm going to cut out 2 of those hours. So if you ever wonder what doesn't go into a talk, we've got all that stuff as well. But it does mean that you learn a lot more than you will just at a straight up conference. Yeah, so about an hour into that, we stop, have pizza, try and get everybody talking. There's that bonding thing that happens over the food that humans, you know, revert back to, lizard brain, or whatever you want to call it. Start sitting there, have a chat, and then if we've got more talks to go, either a second speaker or Adam's still going, we'll bring them in, have everybody come back, sit down, have a talk. And at the end, thanks slightly to our sponsor, Safi, so you invited Cameron Owen, his company, he gives a bit of money. We've been able to go out and buy some prizes to give away to the people who turn up. Just lucky draw prize, and then we send everybody on their way.
Very nice. So what's a length? What's the standard length of?
It's generally in the vicinity of 2 and a bit hours. But it can be, people can stick around afterwards sometimes. They can stay till 9 or so. It's usually 6 till whenever we finish up.
Perfect.
And but people can leave at any time, of course.
You don't want to.
They're not locked in.
Mate, there's probably 2 elements of that I found really interesting. So the conversational aspect of it, right? Especially with coders groups, right? I guess if you had to say coders or developers, by nature, are probably more introverted. So I think that conversational part, helps break down that. And so I think for the challenge to try to get to people to these type of events is to break that down to say people that it is a conversational type thing. You're not going to have to go there and sit by yourself in a corner.
Yeah.
I think that may once have been true.
Yeah.
Some of the people you meet now, they are quite happy to talk and they're actually very, very accomplished people themselves in areas other than just programming. And you can actually find a lot of people who are, interested in extreme sports and all this sort of thing. And they really break the mold of what is traditionally seen as a developer.
Yeah.
But it really, the scene has changed so much in the last 10 years. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But in terms of the group, we definitely don't have people sitting off on their own. You'll find that a lot of people come in. If they don't know anyone, they'll quickly know somebody, because with that news thing, everyone's sort of got a bit of an idea what's going on. It's also a good way to get people talking to each other. And on that, we've just got a really friendly crowd. They often see people come in, they don't know anyone, and they'll sit down next to someone and say, "Oh, yeah, what's going on?" And you start just shoot the shit with them.
Yeah, nice.
then you get a few core people turn up at every meeting, but in general, people just come to the meetings they're interested in. So you'll see different groups of people coming at different talks. And that's one of the things we've always sort of been very broad in our scope. We're not focused on JavaScript or various other particular frameworks or anything like that, as some of the other groups have been.
Yeah.
So we have a bit of scope to try different things and from time to time just, you know, throw in strange talks maybe even that maybe you wouldn't expect. But we cover methodologies, so type of how people develop. We talk about specific frameworks. We talk about databases. We talk about SharePoint or various other platforms that have come and gone over the years.
Yeah.
We've seen various technologies rise and fall in that time. It's been we're in our 14th year now.
Yeah, 14th year now.
We've had
soft skills talks as well, so a few on Agile, but we had one talk that I was a bit worried was going to not be successful at all, where John and I had organised our HR lady from work to come and talk about HR and IT.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, we had two talks, and you could see everyone was there for the second talk. And she got up first, started talking about things, and as she went along, people were just like, yeah, hang on a second, you can negotiate that? Oh, I didn't realise that I couldn't be fired for that, and these sort of things. And it ended up being this talk that we had to be really so engaged, because you know, everybody's worried about their job at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of our talks have been, extreme soft skills, extreme hard skills, and everything in between. But,
that does sound like it's definitely an opportunity if somebody's got a question to ask, that they can come to an event and they've got a problem, they can come and talk to people about it.
There's a peer group there, they definitely can ask questions of. And most people are pretty direct. They'll tell you what they think. And we try to foster an atmosphere of openness and not, not exclusivity at all. I think that's really important.
Key element is not being exclusive is we're pretty much the only group that doesn't meet in a pub.
Yeah.
We've been at the university, and Peter's very big on this. I've tried saying, we should get to a pub. Everybody likes beer. We should get to a pub. And like, no. When I was young, I went to the Linux user group, computer user group, wherever it was.
It would have been the Apple user group. Aubrey Wodonga Apple user group back in the 1984 or 5.
And so we have people under 18 coming on to our meetups. We have one guy, Alex Edwards, admittedly, he's a gun, he's brilliant, but he's come along, he's just finished interning at Atlassian, he's doing these things, but I'm sure why it started, because he didn't come along and start learning about software development when he's in high school.
Yeah.
Had another kid who had been 15 turn up, meet up recently, so we're trying to make sure it's open so anyone who does want to come along can come along.
There was someone who was 11 just the other day.
Oh, 11 was it?
Yeah.
I'm really bad at telling you how old people are once they're sort of...
He came with his father.
There
have been a few parents who brought their kids along just by virtue of the fact that they were concerned, and then over a few years just gone, okay, yeah. Just
hang on to that.
Hang on and hang out there because it's safe. But yeah.
Yeah, I can remember when Alex first came, because that was there not looking overly interested in what was going on. And yeah, by the end, you'd see Alex at the end sit on there and say, go, all right, Dad, come pick me up.
Yeah.
Went on for the night.
Obviously, if you're doing a talk about how something can be used in business context, that talk is probably of less interest than, say, an IoT talk, which we have had both.
The second part that interests me before is the speakers, right? You've talked about people that have spoken at international conferences, and I'm aware that you've got other speakers. As you said, that speak for 5 minutes, somebody probably speaking for their first time publicly to other people, right? How do you go about putting a speaker program together? Because once a month, every month is a phenomenal effort.
Well, we tend to attend events separately, and whenever we do, we go and hassle people who are speaking at those events. And that's a common thing. We just basically get in their face and say, hey, we have this group up there. One thing we were very lucky with early on was that we were talking to Microsoft. They wanted us to sort of be part of the user group family. We decided we wanted to be agnostic. And they were fairly respectful of that, but they were still prepared to send speakers along and talk to people who might have really been interested in Linux or other technologies. So we did get access to a lot of their speakers, and there is actually, they actually put funding towards some of their evangelists, as they call them. So you can access those types of networks, which we have over the years. People like Andrew Coates or Richard Glover.
Is it David Glover?
David Glover. My apologies. And people like Adam Kogan, he actually is a representative of Microsoft in the sense that he's the Microsoft regional director, one of, I think, three or four in Australia. And once a year, all four of them go off to the United States and they find out about what the strategic direction of Microsoft is. And they're very heavily involved. So they have funding that is actually devoted towards coming and talking in events like this. Finding Linux speakers a bit harder, or finding people from other things. Usually they're hobbyists, or they're passionate, or they have some kind of drive to actually talk about this stuff. So we that's a different approach. You're sort of more hands-on. You have to really try and encourage them a lot, and a lot of communication, and basically getting them over the line. Oh, I can help you with that speech, or I can, you know, maybe listen to it and see where I can give you some tips. Or so there's a process of just massaging these sorts of things to happen. And I was talking to Ronan Dehas last night, who runs the new blockchain Newcastle event that's only had four meetings so far. And he was saying that when he can't find a speaker, he's going to have to do it himself. And I think we've both done that.
One month where I was talking before I was even organizing things, he was talking to me like, oh, have you ever done one of these? And he's like, oh, I have. That's going to be our talk on Wednesday now. It's Monday. Wednesday, Pete pulls out a talk and it's like, yeah, here's this thing that Clayton tried to ask me about on Monday. So I'm going to talk about it now. But yeah, it's hard sometimes getting a speaker lineup organized, and sometimes you get really lucky. You get a guy like Rowan, I just called out on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. I said, look, we're looking to set things up, and he jumped on there. Or we had Damian Brady, who's another international Microsoft speaker.
Yeah.
His wife goes, John Hunter, so he moved to Newcastle. And you know, that's just fortunate for us. It's awful easy to get him to turn up. But
we had one of my favorite talks ever was Brad McGeehy, who was at the time one of the most respected DBAs in the world. He worked for a company called Redgate, and he just happened to be coming to Australia, and I was on a mailing list that heard about it, and I just emailed the guy who was organising it, and I said, any chance that you can get Newcastle to be a stop? And after a bit of to and fro, he agreed, and he turned up. Like, someone funded his hotel room for the night, and he came and gave a talk to about 30 people. And it was fantastic. You know, we got to see an advanced talk on how to use the SQL profiler, which you know, you would pay a lot of money to go and attend a proper event for. But he gave the talk for free of his own accord, basically.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So finding speakers often is just a lot of reaching out on whatever social media you've got, whether it's emailing lists or
being famous.
Yeah, belligerent, I like to call it. Walking up to people and saying, hi, I saw you gave a talk. Do you want to give it again? So sometimes that's local people, sometimes international, sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're not. We've had bad talks as well, you know. Had some talks where people turn up and they're really just there to try and sell their consulting services.
I think we've all been one of them in the past.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing that sort of thing happens, but
I think over the years it's happening less. I think people have woken up to that. Even the people giving the talks, just it's pointless.
Oh yeah, I think so. I think it's become well known that, you know, people can see straight through it and see what people are there for. And hey, there is a way to sell to people by actually providing value, right? If you got somebody that's there, and yeah, they might have a business interest in at heart, but they're there, they provide you value. That's a much better sell than them trying to flog you a product.
Absolutely.
That's one thing Microsoft's done doing well with their. On the developer evangelist roles, but also the regional directors and MVP program. It's all those two are pretty unpaid, and it's just them rewarding people for going out in the community and showing people how to use the Microsoft product. So Adam Kogan doesn't get paid to be a regional director, but he just gets to know what's coming up, gets to be important.
Yeah.
It's just because he goes out and he speaks to these things like Newcastle Code Script and provides value to the community, and that then helps Microsoft sell their product in the end.
Yeah. We've really had some great presenters over the years, not just people from international events. We've had people from Redify and SSW come up, various other companies. Paul from Queensland used to come down all the time.
So Paul Usher.
Usher.
You had Paul Stoble from what would become Octopus Deploy?
Yeah, Paul Stovall used to be a regular at our talk. I haven't spoken to him in a few years now, but I should probably hit him up and see if I can get him to give another talk about Octopus. But actually, we were at he was at an event here, and he asked the question of the room, what does everyone think about a deployment option that would get you to deploy software, but it would be like NuGet? And everyone sort of thought, yeah, that's a good idea. That's his company.
Well, it's successful for other people, right? As you said before, it's a sounding board. It's a sounding board for people, and they can either test their ideas, or they can test their speaks, or other people have just got a question. It can become, hey, they're going to most of the time but not be the most intelligent person in the room, right? And you can have that conversation and learn from other people.
Absolutely.
I think that's the most important part of like networking events, right? It's that ability to network and learn from other people. So I think you mentioned before another event, right? Four events hold, the blockchain event at the moment. You guys have been running for longer than anyone in the tech scene in Newcastle?
When we started, there was a group, the Linux user group in Newcastle, Linux owners group in Newcastle. I should get that right. It spells login. and they were the only thing around at the time, and I went to a few of their meetings, and it just wasn't quite the same. It was more of a meetup and peer exchange type of arrangement. Not less sort of, they'd occasionally have speakers and so forth, but I think they sort of morphed into the makerspace type of arrangement. Okay. So they're still around.
My question was going to be along the lines of, you guys have been doing it, obviously successful to be around for as long as you have, because I don't think anyone could question that, because it would be dead if it wasn't successful. What advice would you give to other people that are looking to start meetups or to continue to grow on their meetups?
I'd say regularity is probably key. That's
consistency, definitely.
Well, the JavaScript I've done this year, and going to every second month is so much better than cancelling even every third meeting or every fourth meeting. Just every time I've had to cancel a meeting, we see our numbers drop off immediately. Yep. That regularity just starts to put it in the calendar and say, yeah, well, first Wednesday every month, I'm going to go to the coders group, or I'm going to at least book out the time to go to the coders group even if I decide not to go.
Yeah.
That and get a sponsor. Yep. It's crazy though. How much difference asking someone to pay $5 for pizza versus, you know, everybody in that room is probably reasonably well paid. They're not angling $5, but as soon as you hear that free pizza, that number's probably doubled.
Yeah, I think that's a convenience thing as much as anything, right? And it's just like you can come there and it's a, you know what you're going to get. You're going to be fed. You're going to take home some information, and it just becomes easier. It's an easier sell to people to come along, right?
Sure,
yeah.
So if people are looking to sponsor, reach out to you guys, or
feel free.
Get on my cell phone, meet up, or if you know us another way, or at NCGAU on Twitter. I'm always pretty quick to answer anyone who's on there.
Nice.
Yeah.
What I'd be keen for as well is just some information. Like, you've obviously been around the Newcastle tech scene for a while. I'm relatively new. I've been in the Newcastle tech scene for 4.5 years now. You guys have got a couple of years on me. What's your thoughts on the evolution of the Newcastle tech scene over that time?
When I first arrived at Newcastle, I came from Tamworth, and I'd been running my own business there. I had worked for pretty much all the major clients around that area, and I'd run out of work effectively. So I came to Newcastle, and it was definitely a step up, but there weren't that many programming jobs, and there was definitely a vibe that people were leaving Sydney and coming up the coast. So they were coming up towards Newcastle, and it was sort of a feeling that you had a lot of people entering the scene after the fact of BHP going. So there was a lot of interest in finding a new industry that people could actually, conglomerate around, I guess. And I guess over the time, I mean, there was a concept that if you wanted to have something done or developed, you would go to Sydney. At the time, you didn't have the overseas sort of offshoring happen yet. That was this back in about 2005, but it wasn't far off. But you did have a concept that nothing could be developed in Newcastle, and I think that is completely 180. It is just a complete change. We have so many talented people locally now. We have been involved with the university who provide us with the space to meet on a monthly basis, and that's so important. But they also have put the onus back onto us, and we've participated in various things with the uni, particularly myself. I'm on the advisory board of the IT department, which basically has an industry representative, so that they, I can say to them, you know, I don't think that meets the needs of the industry. And they reach out to various organisations now. And with that level of engagement, I think what's happened over the time is that the community has sort of fed the people that are coming out of the uni, and the uni has fed the local scene as people are staying instead of heading off to the big smoke, and they're effectively created an industry really out of a very strong service industry locally. So it's been a really good upward trajectory the whole time we've been here. So
I haven't been around the industry for anywhere near as long as Pete. Came out of uni in 2008, but in that time, the biggest shift I reckon I've seen is from everything being mining. When I came out of uni, everything in Newcastle was mining related, with a couple of banks and health insurers tackling the side. And now it just seems to have shifted completely. Mining is a side industry for a technical point of view, that is. And we see consultancies and agencies and all these other tech scene just all of a sudden lost it. So it's saying, we've fed the ground, it's starting to grow, and now everything's starting to shoot up. I think Newcastle's a pretty exciting place to be from a tech point of view at the moment.
Yeah.
I can only expect it's going to grow.
So you've been 10 years out of university in Newcastle. How have you seen the change in landscape from an individual perspective in opportunities?
It was mining to start with, and then mining downturn obviously hit just after that, and things went a bit sideways for a year there. Yeah, since then it's increased a lot. Definitely the opportunities and say the breadth of opportunities. Mining's, particularly mining software, isn't a very forward-thinking industry. They're very hesitant to change, and they're based on something that's been going on for a thousand years. Digging stuff out of the ground and burning it, basically. And whereas the industries, the agencies coming up, you've got Newism and Mudbath, and something's kind of providing much more landscape to build other software products here in Newcastle. There's startup industry has just gone crazy the last couple of years. You know, the smart cities and all those sort of things really pushing forward, and it's just opportunities galore now where they just
play. Okay.
Recently.
I think we've been very fortunate locally. We have a sort of a reasonable standard of living. There's always been a perception that you didn't have to necessarily have as quite a larger pay in order to have the same quality of life down in Sydney.
Yeah.
Whereas when the offshoring sort of period happened, which was an issue for a few years there, probably around 2010, I think that there was a perception that everything was going to leave Australia, but it didn't really leave Newcastle. There were still things happening here, and that was really interesting, whereas Sydney probably suffered a lot more. So we've been able to weather a lot of the upturns and the downturns. It sort of just seems to be fairly consistent here. What I find really interesting about the Newcastle scene is that the people really do seem to like living around here, and they really do have a passion for the area. So it's not as, maybe it's not quite as mercenary, this sort of idea that you always get the cheapest. Maybe you actually want to have the relationship with the person that you're employing. So it's an interesting employment market and industry to work in.
Yeah, the other thing that's really started to happen recently is the rise of the remote worker. Seeing more and more people based out of Newcastle to enjoy that quality of living, the standard of living, but working either part time or completely remote from Sydney. And we've had people working for Atlassian, Heroku, or other American companies as well, where they're based out here so they can live here, they're working from home with faster internet speeds and everything going on.
Well, not just remote work, but with the faster net speeds, it means that if the data center's in Sydney, you don't have to have the development team in Sydney to do the work. And AWS and so forth, being able to create virtual servers and all these other sorts of, cloud companies that have sprung up, mean that it really doesn't matter where you are. Being in Newcastle or Sydney or Melbourne, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's been, I think it's really worked in Newcastle's favour over the years.
I completely agree. From the 2 points that you did mention, the people that are born and bred in Newcastle who love the area and won't want to move away. So I think there's a big part of that. But there are also the people that, as you said, who may have grown up here, gone, moved away, but then we're really starting to attract some talent back to Newcastle, who have maybe done some time in Sydney or done some time internationally, and are coming back, looking to settle down with the family, and coming back to Newcastle. And there's plenty of opportunity these days for those type of people as well. you guys have both been to a bunch of national events in the past, and we've had to travel to Sydney in the past to go to events to see speakers. And what do you think the benefits of having something like this in Newcastle for people to attend very easily on a monthly basis is?
I guess there are benefits to the people themselves. You get the chance to learn things that you wouldn't necessarily have access to in your local area. Otherwise, you'd be limited to actually watching it on a video. And with the video, then you aren't able to interact, you aren't able to ask questions. Maybe you might have an impersonal relationship with the forum, but being able to meet the person who actually is the person behind this particular framework is a real advantage. So we try to get experts in the field, and they can often provide insight that isn't available in a context of something online. They can provide experience and examples of things that they've used, right down to, on occasion, the company I work for recently hired a speaker from the group because they were wanting to actually do something that he was an expert in. And it really comes down to, there are so many advantages to having the people in Newcastle and being able to interact with them directly rather than have them somewhere far away where it's maybe you've got a connection over the internet, but what does that mean to a person? It doesn't mean much. It means much more that they recognise you, that they hear you, they've heard your voice, and that they can actually talk to you.
We really do help people build connections both with the speakers and within the group as well. It's led to people getting jobs and sort of thing, but just that ability to know that other people are feeling the same pain that you are. And that's what we get. So sometimes we have the specialty speakers, they tell you what they're talking about really well. Sometimes we just have, say, me getting up and saying, so last week I had a crack at this thing and I hit all these roadblocks. And just knowing that other people in the community are feeling the same thing as you're feeling really does help to bring the community together and share that pain and sometimes solve it.
I will say that there is a vibe that you get on the night when you've got a group of people together and you're talking about something that's really an exciting new technology that you don't get if you're just looking at something online. You can get people get quite passionate about technology and advances and things that are happening. And that can really translate into a really exciting experience. But also, if you were a regular attender of the Coders group and you've come a few times and we've asked, maybe you could put a talk together about something that you maybe want to present about, or maybe that you've got a bit of experience in, that actually can lead to opportunities in itself. So being able to say, hey, I'm someone who goes to participates in the community regularly, I go and attend these meetings and I'm actually an advocate for this type of stuff, that opens doors that maybe wouldn't open otherwise.
I could not agree more. I obviously sit on the employer side of things and helping companies hire talent, and having people that are genuinely interested in this in their own time, going and attending events, but they also go to a point of speaking at events, it shows another level of interest, it shows another level of commitment and passion about what you're doing. And hey, passion's a big part of this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
As you say, we have people who are employers attending these events as well. I went for my interview at NIB, I walked in and the guy sitting on the side of the table with senior speakers. I sat down immediately, we knew each other's names, he started at a point, it's a long way forward from walking into a room with a bunch of strangers.
I completely agree. I couldn't agree more for people that, hey, if you are looking for opportunities or willing to interact or wanting to interact with other people within the community, an event like this would obviously be beneficial. And when we get down to specifics at the end of the day, why should people attend Newcastle Coders Group?
Well, when we've sort of talked about the rise of the Newcastle industry, I guess tech industry over the last 10, 15 years, I don't think those things happen in isolation. It's people participating in the community. It's people basically putting themselves out there and doing things that actually makes things happen locally. So I guess by participating, you're actually helping yourself, you're helping the people around you, you're helping your friends, and your community actually rises as a result of participation. Basically creating an environment where there's more opportunity. And going forward, I think that that's really why you should be attending these things. It just helps everyone and it lifts the boat. I'm someone who has basically come along at a time when things were, there wasn't really a lot happening. But there really is a lot happening now. And whether you come to our group or another group, it's really important, I think, that people come to something that they're interested in and do what they can to participate.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if we are talking about somebody participating, where are they coming? When are they coming?
So we're first Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. Kick off the news section at 6 p.m., the talk about 6:30, and then if people need to leave early, they're welcome to. If they do arrive late, it's not going to be a big deal. We're in the ICT building, which is on top of the multi-story car park at the Callaghan campus of the University of Newcastle. And we're usually in room 34, but if we need to get shined out, we'll have somebody in the foyer during the waiting room.
Cool. And it's an all-age event?
All-ages event. So if you can walk, you're welcome to turn up. And if you can't, you're also welcome to turn up.
And pizza available.
Yeah, pizza available. If you've got dietary requirements, we'll make sure we cater for it. As long as Domino's can cater for it.
Sounds very inclusive.
You can get us on Meetup. So we're Newcastle Coders Group on Meetup. We're ncg.asn.au. So ASN stands for association, because we're an association and we want to be good net citizens, even though nobody else uses the ASN domain name. And we're on Twitter at ncgau. If you need to get in contact with us because you want to speak, you want to attend, or you want to sponsor, just grab us on any of those forums. We'll get back to you. Quick.
We'll link that all up in the show notes as well on the New Tech People website. So hey, hopefully people can get in touch with you. Hopefully we can increase the attendance and continue the success of the Newcastle Coders Group.
Yeah, let's continue the success of the Newcastle development community in general, really.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's right. Thanks, man. Cheers.
For all the show notes, including all the links we discussed in today's episode, please visit newtechpeople.com.au. Hope you tune in next time.